Silk is chillin', Giz is chillin'. What more can I say? Top villain.
What up, everybody? This your boy Bill Bellamy, and you are watching and listening Top Billing, the number one podcast for the culture, the movement, and the discussion. Today, I have a treat for you. I got one of the most incredible comedian, writer, producer, sketch comic. He can
exit
do
nine.
I exit nine. Jersey. And a Jersey native.
Cluck you chicken ruckus. There it is. Hey, downtown New Brunswick.
Come on, man. Stop playing. This brother right here. Yes. Give us some more. Bah, 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 bah.
Yeah.
Jersey's finest. Harry Spears. Let me tell you why this interview means so much to me. I was just coming up in the game, getting on, coming up. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking 91, 92, Peppermint Lounge, roughly.
Tribeca, Indigo Blues.
Come on, man! I'm coming up in the game, right? And for the Jersey people that's listening and watching,
Club 88,
Terminal D.
Shout out to Bob Sumner.
Shout out to Bob. Bah, 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 bah. We we had a young kid. And actually it's only two young comedians that I met who were teenagers when they started, Ari Spears and Dave Chappelle. And I will never forget this because I couldn't understand why you was in the club. I didn't know you at the time.
Right.
And you looked out of place. I was like, man, somebody child in here, man. Who child? And you were standing back where the comedian stand.
Yeah.
So, and you said, hey, Mr. Bellamy.
Yeah.
You say, hey, Mr. Bellamy, I'm Aries. I'm going on tonight. And I was like, how you get in here? You know, I'm with my mom. My mom got me and everything. And one thing I remember vividly about you, you were very confident and very charismatic. So I was like, damn, nigga, how you know you want to be a goddamn comedian at 16? That's eighth grade, right? Ninth grade.
Yeah.
How did you know you want to be a comic so early?
Listen, man, born in 75, 80s baby, coming up watching Eddie Murphy the King on Saturday Night Live. And, you know, I always knew I wanted to be famous, but I didn't know what it was going to be. I tried boxing, but I realized I like food and I'm not disciplined.
Right.
And my mother's Mississippi, father Tennessee. Salt and grease was relevant.
Right.
I thought I was going to be a rapper, but I don't have the skills like that.
Right.
But comedy was always something that kind of came natural to me, doing impressions. And then I did my homework, man, and I found out Eddie Murphy started at 14.
Mm-hmm.
He's an April 3rd Aries baby like me, April 3rd. From New York. So I just took all of that as motivation.
And I could do it.
I could do this, you know?
And bro, I'm telling you, and it's probably very few guys could really, really talk from this angle, this lens that I had, because I saw you, and it was so funny. Like, I saw you as I was climbing. Like, I was literally about to get MTV, or maybe I was right at MTV level of fame and moving forward, and I'm seeing my little youngin coming through. From New Brunswick, New Jersey, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I went to Rutgers, so so I was familiar where you were from
and
everything.
Let me tell everybody. Here's what was crazy, and this is what was a little intimidating about Bill.
Why?
Bill, you was known as like the Denzel of comedy, because when I tell you, he never touched the stage without a fly suit.
Mm-hmm.
The perm was on point, and
I had the super S curl.
Man, the women came out in droves.
Yeah, I had
heard about you almost like on some Bigfoot legend shit before I saw you. And
no everybody's doubt.
Like, man, if you come down to the Peppermint on Thursday nights, it's basically Bill Bellamy night. You know, the women, it's crazy. Here's the thing. You know, sometimes you get people in this game who are bona fide pretty boys, but they don't back it up.
Okay.
Then you got dudes like the Oscar De La Hoyas. Big shout out to my man, white comedian Matt Rife.
Right.
Yourself. There are dudes who visually look the part, but pack the punch.
You gotta pack
the fucking punch.
It won't work
so
if you don't pack it.
When I saw you, I was like, okay, this nigga's cut from Sugar Ray Leonard's cloth. He got the looks. He got the charisma.
I'm fast.
I see a lot of women like him.
Right.
But the nigga got, yo. He's an animal.
But you got to understand.
Animal.
Let me tell you, I got
so
a lot.
So much so, I'm sorry.
Go.
So much so that I'm telling you, Hollywood, pay this man his residuals, booty call.
Yeah, they owe me some money.
They owe you owed it. Y'all made the movie?
Yeah, they owe me some
money. All of that stemmed from this nigga's joke. And that became popular in cultural vernacular. How like bling bling, and you know, once the old white women took it, it was over. But booty call was a term that was used in the 90s and 2000s that was popular. And it's always funny because when people say that or laugh at it, I go, they don't know the origin.
They don't even know why they say
Bill started that.
Thank you for that, man. I really appreciate it. And that's the beauty of comedy, man. A lot of things that we say in jest when we're like working out or really, really like nailing a joke become universal.
Yeah.
Like certain jokes that I've seen you done on your Def Jam, it's evergreen.
Listen, I'm gonna throw this name out. Okay. You tell me if you're gonna back me up.
Go.
Robo DJ, Will E.
Will E.
Now, I'm trying to grow as a human being.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm older. I'm 48.
Okay.
So I'm not gonna go into my old ways.
You've gotten better.
I'm just saying.
But let's get to it.
Robo DJ was taken from a young kid and completely stolen. Because that was one of my biggest closing bits.
Yes, it was.
When I used the Yamaha XPX90 sound machine. But here's why I know it's called staying power. That wasn't the only bullet I had in the chamber.
Yeah.
That was his only bullet.
Yeah.
So once that got fired, it was now what else?
See, here's the thing. I'm so happy you brought that up. One of the things that people always ask me about originality, and they say, okay, yo, B, when y'all coming up, you know, what was it like with cats? We had a wonderful respect, I would say 90% of the game. This is a fraternity if you're a comedian. Yeah. And people don't steal jokes generally, but when you got a smoker, I've seen it. I've seen motherfuckers say, yo, they ain't going to see me do this in St. Louis or whatever. Right? But I vividly remember that piece.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't put the two and two together, though.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
That was one of my first joints from about 14 to 16. And it was so, and again, the concept I saw the movie RoboCop.
Yes.
So my joke was, picture RoboCop fucking. And the same way his gun would come out of his hip with all the sound effects, I had my dick come out of my pants.
Right, exactly.
And I'm doing them all the, you know, sound effects fucking and all. And of course, I would end it with the step back. Thank you for your cooperation. And walk off. And
people are running.
I saw him do that on a Showtime at the Apollo. And I was like, this motherfucker.
Yo, well, man. Just call him and say you're sorry,
man. You ain't got to say you're sorry. We good.
Hey, listen. But it happened.
Yes.
I got one that it's mythical. And I don't know if I do this, is it going to start a bunch of shit. But it is definitely an interesting concept on, you know, old school situation. Real quick before we get interview. Derek Fox, Jersey comedian, had a bit where he would do his whole show and he would close with, what's the character?
Shantae.
Okay. Now
I'm wondering if you're going
I'm going to let me live, but you going to know where I'm going.
I think so.
Everybody in Jersey knew that when Derek Fox does Shantae, it is going to be pandemonium.
And that's the closing bit.
That was his closing bit. Okay. So, early 90s, Martin Lawrence comes to Jersey. this is a Jersey situation. Uh-oh. And anybody got something to say about this, I can stand on this. I'm at Terminal D. Martin Lawrence comes to Terminal D and destroys the place. First time ever seen Martin in New Jersey.
Right.
All right, cool. Cut to Derek performs that night.
Coincidence.
Does Shantae.
Who later is known as.
Go ahead.
Shanae.
Now, I'm not going to say nothing because it ain't the same name, but I'm going to say something. Derek Fox stopped doing comedy.
There are some dudes who, if you're really good at what you do, you're a machine gun. And then some dudes are a 1756 musket shot.
Yeah.
Bow. And that's it.
Yeah. And you ain't got no other
you
one.
You ain't got nothing else.
Right.
Willie, Derek Fox, with all due respect, Derek Fox. Willie, I was mad. I didn't even know Willie. Right. But I was just mad it was blatant theft. But I knew I came up with Derek.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, right. So it might be more personal because we Jersey cats and we seen him do right. it a million times. Right. And we knew he was going to close with it.
When he literally took his bread and butter.
So we cannot, you know, and Martin, you're my guy. I can't verify this and say, yo, whatever. But I'm just going to say, your shenanigans that Martin took to a whole nother level that was bomb, like to a level where we had to see it on his show,
right.
killed Derek Fox's. Like yeah. Derek couldn't even go back and do it no more. No,
because the unfortunate part is,
yeah, I always now, wanted to tell
now
that
everybody's going
to
say, look what he stole from Martin. That's why he can't do it anymore.
He can't do it.
Because
yeah.
everybody going to go, oh, he doing Shanae. Yeah. When in reality, no, he doing Shantae.
Yeah, Shantae
who
was around.
For Shanae.
Yeah. I always wanted to tell that story. You know, we can't prove it. If Martin want to come on one day on Top Billing and tell your side of it, I'd love to hear it. But on the Jersey cats, for the cats that we grew up with, we felt like, real talk, that came from Derek Fox. And Derek Fox will probably, I mean, he's doing really well right now.
Right.
And he don't probably give a fuck. Right. But I care, and I just thought I wanted to get that out. I just want to clear my conscience.
I hear you.
Since you're clearing it out.
I bring that out of
you. You brought that out of
you. I brought that out of you.
Now, earlier when we were talking,
yeah.
You were saying that your gift of voice, your perspective, your attitude is a blessing.
My Charles Barkley, like,
yeah,
no giving a fuck demeanor.
Correct. And you stand on a lot of things that
I
you're
do.
Very passionate
I
about.
I do.
Why do you think it gets misconstrued or it goes left? Do you think you hit it too hard?
Well, I think that before that, you know, I always say this game is, Hollywood is like high school, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's very segregated. The cool kids sit with the cool kids, the goth with the goth, the jocks with the jocks, preps and preps. And a lot of times, people go off of what they hear rather than do self-investigation.
Okay.
They go, I heard he's like this. Yeah. I heard he's like that.
Right.
So the seed has already been planted for you to feel a certain way about me without meeting me,
correct.
Without doing self-investigation. And then on top of that, like I said, I stand on what I stand on, and I'm real. Listen, there have been a lot of things that I have said that I wish I could take back.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily because I don't believe in what I said. I just know that knowing how this game is, should have said it. You know what I mean? Because right. no matter what you do or what you say,
you're going to get criticized.
You're going to get criticized and you know, there's consequences and repercussions. But I've always believed in what I said. Just probably shouldn't have said it.
Right.
You know? And it's like...
This wasn't the right place
for
it.
And like I said, my mouth is my biggest attribute, but it's also my biggest detriment.
And the beauty of it is that you own it, right? And I've seen you go from being a 16 year old to 18 to 20 to getting in the game and the game picked up for you really, really fast. And,
maybe too fast.
And it was really fast for you.
Yeah.
And being so young, I'm glad, like for me, what helped save me was I was a civilian for most of my life and then got famous. So I didn't, right. It wasn't like I was a child and it hit me as a grown man. So I could navigate a little better, but it was still a lot for me. I'm gonna be honest with you. So as a young guy coming to the show with your mom being your manager and taking care of you and making sure you good to you branching your wings and jumping in this Hollywood game, what was that like for a young comedian?
Well, see, here's the part that I think where it would have been better for me had it not happened that way. You know, it's like, look, man, most comedy dudes, they come up with a click.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you look at any of the great comedy documentaries about comedians from Boston, comedians from New York, a lot of them dudes, you know, and especially in the trenches of the struggle, lived together,
mm-hmm.
you know, rode in the same
Hell
car,
yeah.
supported each other. I Nas this shit. I was a loner.
Right.
I didn't have nobody. I didn't have nobody to pull my coattail and go, hey, young man, come here.
Right.
No, don't do that. Don't say that.
Right.
You got to be careful.
Right.
Watch where you step. Everything I learned by my motherfucking self. Moved out. I started at 14, Def Jam with Martin 16, Showtime at the Apollo 17. By the middle of my 17s, I moved to LA by myself.
Oh,
I lived in Compton with my aunt in a room. So I was taking the bus from deep down in Compton to the Comedy Store.
Wow.
So, you know.
Grinded.
Everything I learned from 17, 18, 19 and beyond, I'm learning as I go.
Whoa.
So think of it like Mike Tyson. You putting a lot of shit in a young person, success, fame, money.
Women.
And Customato had a great saying about Mike. As much as he loved him and saw him as like a son, and Mike to him like a father figure, he goes, you're not smart enough to understand that there are wolf dressed in sheep's clothes. You're not smart enough to see the difference.
Right.
And when you don't know this shit and you're learning as you go.
Bro, it's rough.
Oh, dude, you do a lot of shit that, you know, can put you behind the eight ball.
Yes,
and now you're constantly playing catch up.
Listen, you are hitting it right on the head. And a lot of people admire what we do. Like people say, yo, how are you, Bill Bellamy? You know, you always happy. You, you know, man, damn, Bill, you been on, you know, whole career. You know, I remember LL Cool J said to me in a limo one day, he was like, yo, be on everything I love, man. You've been good since you came on, man. You ain't never had a bad album. I never forget
everything
that.
You done, but solid beat.
Yeah, you know solid. Yeah.
So, it's crazy, man. Every time I watch you, man, you're like you dripping chocolate, man.
Yo, that's what I'm saying. Like he hit me in the head with that one day, and he was saying I was blessed, right? You know, and I was, you know, early in my career, and I was blessed because I came out like a shot out like a rocket. But what I didn't have no outside of Shaq, you know. I mean, there was nobody I could talk to that. Know what that fame shit do. Because fame is like a drug or like a sexy chick you want to see all the time. You know, you think she going to be around forever.
Right.
You know, she might be a summer.
Right.
You know what I mean? You might have, like you said, you might have one Def Jam and you out.
Being a famous dude is like being a pretty bitch.
Yeah, you ain't going to be pretty forever.
Right, but you, the same advantages that a pretty woman has.
That's what fame
is. For a dude, yeah, you get all that.
And you get all that.
Let me tell you some quick story. I'm on Mad TV. And, you know, this business is political. It's racist. I'm on Mad TV, and very popular female cast member. I ain't going to say her name because, again, it's my growth. Now, when I may have told this story some odd years ago, I said the name.
Right.
Very popular. She's on one of the most popular cartoons, voiceovers. She's dating the white boy on the show. Deborah Wilson, my girl, my sister, black girl from Mad TV. Mm-hmm. She's dating one of the white boys on the show that's a cast member. And we're all sitting in the makeup room getting ready to shoot the next scene. And this chick, the one who I'm not going to say, says to another white chick on the show, oh my God, so-and-so, look at it, looks like I got raped by a nigga and I got the proof under my fingernails to prove it. And she was saying that to spite Deborah. Now, me and Deborah, of course, took offense to it.
Correct.
So we made the dumb mistake of thinking if we went to the producers and said, hey, this was said, it wasn't cool, blah, blah, blah. That's the right thing to do. Oh, don't do that, black people. You can't complain, niggas. Let me do it in my Paul Mooney. Nigga, don't you ever goddamn complain, nigga. Stay in your goddamn place, nigga. This is Hollywood. Stay in your goddamn place, nigga. So we got in trouble.
Right. You got in trouble.
We got in trouble.
Right.
We didn't make the racist comment. We didn't offend. We were offended. But we got in trouble for speaking up.
Wow.
Now, this is where I go, maybe if somebody would have been able to, hey, brother, don't do it. It's not worth it.
Don't do it.
It's Hollywood.
It's Hollywood.
We know she ain't you know it. She wrong.
She wrong. Ain't mean it. She ain't mean it.
yeah, you complaining ain't going to do nothing but fuck you up. Yeah. As crazy as that is.
And it don't seem like it makes no sense, but it's true.
And so the legend is told he's difficult.
Correct.
Ari Spears is difficult. Because he might go to a producer and raise hell about a nigga joke.
Right.
How dare I? So, you know.
And there we go.
Because
here's the thing. First impressions are sometimes everything. And certain things can kind of linger in your career, right? Mad TV took off. It made a major splash in the game. Then it dipped off. You know, it was rivaling sort of the In Living Color vibe, sketch comedy.
Right.
Y'all was edgy.
Yep.
And then this is the thing about Hollywood that people don't understand. Like you could be the darling of the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you on the hot show. They fly you private. You doing all the right shit. You got the right money. And then that shit stopped. Now you on to your next job. How do you handle that part of the business?
Well, you know, and listen, this is not me trying to be braggadocious or arrogant, but here's where I think this is an ode to my skill level. Listen, man, I haven't been in a major movie since Jerry Maguire, I think 1988 or 99. I haven't been a regular on a TV show since Mad TV. I think that's 20 years ago. And I'm still selling out shows.
Yeah.
People are still coming to see me. And I think that's a testament to they know my cocaine is uncut. My yayo is not stepped on, nigga. Yeah, it's real. Bring the thunder.
Yes, sir.
It's now, at some point, you have to get on something. Right. You have to do something to maintain that. And I believe I will. But for me to have not been on the scene like that, film-wise or television-wise, in 20 years, but and also, I'm still as relevant as
you
some
ever
of
were.
The top niggas
but,
in the game.
But this is a thing, Aries. And this is an attribute that why a lot of guys want to be comedians.
Right.
Because being a fantastic, great joke king, you have your own lane outside of Hollywood. So here's the thing. A lot of guys want to do comedy till they get movies and TV and quit comedy, right? Sure. Comedy is how you get to the people. Comedy is how people get to feel you and see your real your personality, your real jokes, your real vibe. That's how you lock in with your fans, right? If you only did TV and movies and didn't do no stand-up, how they gonna touch you?
Right.
Think about it. I mean, they got social media now.
Right.
But we came up with the non-social media world. So now cut to, you know, you can survive being a fantastic comedian because one, you have social media. Two, you are a name. Three, you always stay in some shit, so your name pops up every now and then because you go do some shit. Like, you be popping up in my feed, I'd be like, oh, Lord.
What did I do?
What'd he do? Because it could be something as funny, as fun as music.
Right.
If it comes up with hip hop, you going in. Right. If anybody talking about Michael Jordan not being the number one player ever, you going to spaz. Okay.
So, yeah, you know, I have an affinity for number 23 in red. And part of the reason for that is because Mike had no weaknesses in his game. Period. He wasn't just a dunker. Basketball IQ, passing, rebounding, both ends of the courts, offensively, defensively. And I liken a lot of what we do to sports, but let me actually put it in a football analogy. You could be a Hall of Fame award-winning championship quarterback who stays in the pocket.
Correct.
But you're even deadlier when you can Michael Vick it. Meaning crowd work.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great comedians who, in terms of their material, their playbook, are unfuckwittable.
Yeah, you can't fuck with them.
But if you a nigga that can go in that crowd and say, fuck the playbook and scramble.
Woo! You could create magic in there.
And again, I'm not trying to be braggadocious.
No, but
being honest.
True. Speak it.
Some of my crowd work is better than niggas' written material.
Yeah.
And the written material is potent.
Yeah.
So now if you, the material, the crowd work, the impressions, the ability to sing, your timing, fearlessness, edgy, raw. Yeah, man, my coke good, nigga. My coke is strong.
But see, that goes back to what we said earlier in the interview, why you have a career.
Right.
Because you have all the attributes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You Patrick Mahomes, Michael Vick, you Joe Theismann, you Joe Namath, all the right quarterbacks with all the right attributes. So now you have longevity. I mean, you could play Tom Brady too, because Tom Brady stretched it out, right? So what I'm saying to you is don't be surprised why you're here. You're here because you did the work.
Absolutely.
And you're working.
Absolutely.
And so
but the frustrating thing is
what?
When you go, in terms of what I've been able to do with what I've been given,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now imagine if I could get that other shit. Like when I go, like I did a movie called 420 with one of the Baldwin brothers and David Keith, the black brother.
David Keith.
Yeah. And you know, it was cool, but let me be honest, it was low budget, it was independent. Was it the most quality type movie? Nah. But the scenes that I did on YouTube and Instagram, people was like, yo, this is crazy. And now I go, God, imagine if I got a Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah.
A quality director, quality writers surrounded by other talent where we can elevate each other.
But you
got to
see that, though, bro. See what I'm saying? So, like, with me, you know, this doesn't work for everybody, but for me, I see it already. You know what I'm saying? And you got to see yourself doing it. Like, you just called it. That's a manifestation right there. Right? That's a process of your manifestation. You just said what you want.
Right.
Right? But not what if. I am. So just change it.
Yeah, I'm actually
I'm gonna do it, Judd. I'm a rock with Judd. That's a different statement.
I hear you. It's funny because I'm actually battling with my baby mother right now about that because she's deep into the manifestations, affirmations.
It's real.
Yeah.
And now listen. All it is an adjustment.
Okay.
I'm not asking you to change much. I'm just talking about how you say it.
All right.
You know, it's the difference between saying I think I'm gonna make it than I am.
Right.
It's just an adjustment. I am moving to Cal. I remember when I said, I am moving to L.A. I am making movies. I am going to leave the Peppermint.
I said all that, Bill.
Right. Well, because this business, what's that, bro? What the business that people don't see in Hollywood is there's so many no's. And there's so many setbacks before you get back, right? And so what we need to do as artists, and I believe we are artists, is that we never lose your energy to win. And it's sometimes you get low.
Yes.
Sometimes you get low. You don't always have the will to fight back. Sometimes you don't want to give a fuck no more. And I've seen that in you. Okay. I've been in front of yours for a long time. I've seen you when you didn't see me see you. Mm. And I've seen you low. And I said, let me go talk to him. You remember how many times I used to call you out of random?
Yeah.
Just checking on you?
Yeah.
And you always say, I'm all right, B, you know what I'm saying? And I one time you said, yo, B, I'm working on it. I'll never forget that. You said, B, I'm working on it. Because what happened for me was I was doing a show the week after you.
Right.
And for whatever reason, something went wrong. Or whatever. And I said to the GM, I said, yo, that's my man. Y'all got it wrong with him. I said, y'all don't understand. I feel like he's going through a lot right now. And maybe, you know, it's just a buildup. I don't think it's personal because I know he a good dude. That's when I called you. And I was like, yo, man, what's going on? And you was like, yo, B, man, it's just been weird time for me. And your voice, you look so good right now that I'm so excited for
Listen,
you.
Listen, big shout out to my man, Dion Cole. I loved how in his last special, he said, hey, man, real talk, I want y'all to show these comedians some love, man, because, you know, we got to do all this dance and shit, and y'all don't know deep down inside sometimes we be dying inside.
Oh, God.
He goes, a boxer get hit, that's part of the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, we human beings, man, we go through shit. And it's just like I said, I came from poverty. You know what I mean? I'm the first and only person in my family to see two commas on a yearly check.
Right.
You know what I mean? And have success. So again, it ain't like somebody pulled my coattail and said, watch out for this. Don't do this. Don't do that. Do this. I am literally learning as I go. So there's been so many stumbles and falls and mistakes. And admittedly so, my fault. On a lot of things I've done that I probably shouldn't have done. And a lot of shit that wasn't my fault. But that come with it when you don't know.
Right.
So, yeah, man, there's just been times like where I just say to myself, man, I said to myself before I ever got on a plane and came to L.A., man, I'm making it. And I'm going to do this till the wheels fall off. I'm going to do this till I die. This
Facts.
Is it.
This is it.
And there are days where I wake up and I still feel like that. But then there are other days where I can't even get out of bed. And I go, man, I'm ready to ask the devil, what's the going rate on the soul? I'm ready to get out of here.
Right.
You know, if I could, you know, make sure I got enough money to really fall back. And I love women, period, but black women, you know, my two baby mothers, one black, one Puerto Rican. I love ethnic women. That's spice. I like spice on my chicken.
Right.
But
you like that?
I like some of that adobo. some Tabasco.
Right.
But and there are times when I'm just going, I'm ready to cash out with a white bitch.
Right. Why are you going
to
cash out?
Let me find a white bitch with some money.
Right.
And with my money.
Hey, yo.
I'm going to wake up with stringy hairs out my teeth.
What about my man that like maxed out with Bill Gates' daughter? He got the smile of life. You know
Come on, man. Nigga, look like he's smiling like she signed his freedom papers.
What?
And listen, joking, but not joking. Right, but we're joking.
But serious.
About the white chick.
But I mean, let's keep it real.
Black women, Hispanic women, that's my first love. Right. You love what you love. Ain't no shame in that.
Right.
But I'm just like, man, this fucking game, dude. I said I will never quit.
Right.
Because to me, quitting is the weakest thing you can ever do.
Correct.
But and it, I still
but
stand.
But they be pushing you to the wall, huh?
Nigga, like, I'm going.
But you don't believe in rubbers?
Nigga threw me off.
No, they don't. They don't make rubbers where you live. They don't wait. You know, they don't make.
I actually have a joke about that too. That's hilarious.
You know what I mean? Because you know, once the baby situation get in there and y'all ain't together, it get weird.
But to me, it's not even that. Okay. It's just, you know, the beatdown that this life combined with show business, mm-hmm. combined with, you know, the people that you take care of, and it's easy for people to go, I appreciate you. Words is nothing. That's easy. That's rehearsed.
Yeah.
I appreciate you. Love you. I'm thankful. Your actions is another thing.
Yeah.
And it's tougher to show it physically than verbally. So, you know, I got all the people telling me how much they love me and appreciate me all fucking day. But I could tell by your actions, you don't mean it or you don't understand it. Because if you understood how hard it is to make it in this business, to earn a dollar, to pay all the bills, to never need for nothing, then your behavior would match your words.
But no one can understand.
Or give a fuck.
Most
people really don't give a fuck.
Because they not walking it.
No.
Yo, you know how hard it is to be Steph Curry? Do you know how hard it is to make them shots like that every night? How many thousands of shots this man has practiced to make that from half court, turn around,
from his bathroom.
From his bathroom. Right. Like no one knows what that's like. No one knows what LeBron James goes through to take care of his body for a whole season where he played 20 years. He's been playing since he was 9,
right?
Okay, gave the NBA 20 of his best years, still getting buckets.
Still ain't better than MJ.
I get it. But what I'm saying is he used technology, maybe his diet, maybe his, you know, his workout regimen. LeBron ain't in the clubs. He ain't a party cat. You know, he take care of his body. Do you know what it's like to be a LeBron James? Do you know what it's like to be an Aries Spears, to be able to go out, sell out shows, travel, write? Got to write now. Got to have the mind to write the shit that you want to say, put it in order, practice it, get the brag.
Get up early, 4 a.m, catch the flight, 5 hours, get up another 5:00 a.m, do the press, you know.
Come on.
Like, listen, man, listen.
It's a lot to
the people that love you at some point, when they meet you, they meet the celebrity.
Correct.
But when they love you, that doesn't matter, and it shouldn't to a degree. Because now you, the real you, you're the person they love, to your kids, you just daddy, you know. But at some point, I just go, listen, when I'm with my baby mom and we walking in the streets,
right,
and 5-6 people, Aries, cars stop. Yo, I sometimes will go, bitch, remember. Who you with?
Yeah.
Look, remember. Now, I'm not saying you're supposed to treat me like the king all the time.
But be respectful.
But remember who the fuck you with.
What's wrong with that, though?
Remember, you're not with the average motherfucker.
Hey, man. Hey, bro. Ain't nothing wrong with that. You know, and whether it's an ego thing or not, I think a lot of times when you an alpha male, you know, we make it look easy.
Let me tell you. Just like I love Jordan, one of my favorite TV shows of all time, The Sopranos. Mm. In one episode, there was this episode where Tony was hanging out with his dad's mistress. And at one point, she talked about how she fucked Kennedy. And she goes, a woman's job when dating a powerful man is to make him feel powerful.
Facts.
So again, we want you to be natural, real. We want to see each other as not the facade, but the human beings that we fell in love with. But every now and then, treat a nigga how.
Level up.
Come on, man.
Listen, man, you touching on an area of, and some people will listen to this and some people will watch it and say, well, that's just our ego. You know,
women will say that.
Yeah, you know, but I feel like it's also we need to feel love.
It's a necessity.
It's a necessity. You know what I'm saying? And the hardest thing for most people to understand about this game, especially being in it like now for me, 29 years being in the entertainment business, is love is essential. Like the love of your audience, the love of your family, the love of your best friends, your love of your mom. Like that gives you the fuel that you need to do everything.
I know this is gonna sound corny, man, but and I say this, but it's weird. Like sometimes I get more love from complete strangers
than the people that you want it from.
Your family, your blood.
Oh, all day.
And I say, and sometimes you know it brings me a little bit to getting choked up because I'm just like,
how is that possible?
Man, you just don't understand. Sometimes when I'm feeling like I want to quit, when I feel suicidal, and I read some of the comments from people online,
right,
and they say things in such a way where you just, all right, I got a second win.
They gave it to you.
They gave it to me, man.
See, I feel like,
and then there's some people that say shit that make you want to kill yourself,
right? But here's the thing that I think that's really interesting about being comics, and like you mentioned earlier with Deion Cole, is being a comedian is a lonely road in a way. A lot of guys might be road comics and typically don't travel with anybody. Right. They usually are loners and do what they need to do. And a lot of times you by yourself, you know. Bob Saget, you know, one of my great friends, man, you know, was doing his thing, having a good time, doing what he loved to do. He died, you know, in a hotel room by himself. You know what I'm saying? Right. On the road, right? This has happened in my career to about 7 to 8 different comedians. They're on the road by themselves. Something happened in the hotel, they die. Boom, 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 boom. So a lot of them have had like deep, deep, deep depression. There was a dude named, I think his name was Brody.
Brody.
Do you remember
Brody? Yes.
Brody?
He would do the warm-up for Best Damn Sports Show.
Bro.
Yeah.
Brody was one of the nicest, coolest guys you would ever know.
Right.
He'd do warm-ups for all the shows. You see him at the Comedy Stories. All right, Bellamy, what's happening, man? I'm doing my thing, man. I'm moving. Right. I can't talk to you right now. I'm moving, moving fast. But he was always good energy.
Right.
He killed himself.
Right.
Okay. And what the point I'm about to make
Robin Williams.
Happy man. Making everybody happy. Got out of here, right? One of the issues I think that is very difficult for men to talk about is mental health, right? And I don't know why, but it's just one of these stigmas that, you know, guys don't ever want to open up about, you know, oh, you know, I had a tough time dealing with this and I don't want to tell anybody I'm going to get judged or this makes me weak or whatever. Like for me, you know, I lost my brother, I lost my mom, I lost my dad last year. It was devastation. Like it was the craziest feeling to have these losses back to back to back, right? So I know what dark means. You know, people always say, oh, yo, P, you always up. Yo, I know that. I know where it's at, right? Despair or just feeling lost or just having those moments in your life where you don't know what tomorrow could be because you're so in a deep place and dark today. You don't know tomorrow. You don't know that you got to fight to get to tomorrow. Have you ever felt something like that?
You know, dude, it's like, you know, when you're young, you know, you believe you're immortal. You know, your shit don't stink. You're going to live forever. You're going to be pristine forever. But then the older I get through humility and just through things I see, that reality hits you that, hey, you're going to die. Mm-hmm. You're going to get old. You're not going to be as beautiful as you once were. And it just makes you question your mortality. Mm-hmm. Like, listen, once upon a time, and I don't want to get off on a tangent on this because that's a whole nother, we could do a whole nother hour on religion.
Okay.
But, you know, once upon a time ago, man, I really believed in God hard body, nigga. Mm-hmm. And there are times when I still go, okay, I do. But then there are certain things that happen that make absolutely no sense to me that make me question everything. Like I'm sitting here going, people are telling me, you know, God has a plan for you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a destiny. God gives man free will, blah, 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 you know. And I go, well, wait a minute. Kobe Bryant and his daughter, 13, who did nothing to innocent. Nobody.
Like, why would that happen?
Chadwick Boseman, who used to visit kids in the hospital with cancer, dies of cancer.
Yeah.
Why am I special? Why am I supposed to believe that I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, right. or that
when
this
these
destiny,
all these people and they have
these just, great people.
Golly, yeah.
You know,
I know exactly what you mean.
I'm a big fan of the show Real Time with Bill Maher. Now, if you know anything about Bill Maher from the movie Religiousless to his show, he's a loud, proud atheist.
Great. Yeah, he built this.
Destroys religion and the belief of God.
He's not playing.
And I sit here and go, make this make sense to me. So to the people that believe, that pray, go to church, give their 10%.
Correct.
And I'm sure a lot of those people were black folks from New Orleans. Katrina hits. Their lives are turned upside down. Some don't ever recover. Some died.
Yeah.
And they believe in God. They pray to God. And here's Bill Maher, loud, proud atheist, millionaire, flies private jet, denounces religion. Make that make sense. The people that believe and worship, get on their hands and knees and pray, give they 10%.
And they get demolished.
They get demolished. But the man who don't believe and destroys anybody who believes is all right. Make it make sense.
It's tough, man. You know, here's the thing, that duality of life and, you know, circumstances make you question, you know. You know, whether it's a loss of a family member, whether it's a cancellation of a show, whether, you know, you get a setback in your career where, you know, you're trying to get back on and you're wondering if you're going to get that taste again. I mean, I remember a long time ago, you know, I came out here to L.A. I got on. I had a huge TV deal, got the NBC money, jumped right to Fox. We did a whole season of Fastlane that was bananas. We was coming on after American Idol, bro.
Right.
Numbers, everything was cracking. We gonna get picked up. Ain't nothing to talk about, bro. And I will never forget this. Like, we got canceled, man. I was like, yo, is it over? Like, literally, I'll never forget the feeling. I'm driving home. And I'm like, yo, is this over for me?
Let me try to match you.
Oh, my God.
Before Mad TV.
Damn.
And I know you probably remember this. Once upon a time ago in Hollywood, they used to give out what was called development deals.
Facts.
Where if you crushed on stage, they paid you some money to take you off the market.
Yeah,
we want to create something for you. They don't do that shit now.
No.
But for the first 5 years of my tenure here in L.A., I went from network to network with development deals. It had gotten so to the point where I was known around town as this awesome young kid, this force who's getting all this money. Everybody want to fuck with him, but nothing was ever happening.
But they don't know what to do with him.
Don't know what to do with him. Cut to my very first show, South of Sunset, our action cop drama show, kind of like Mod Squad. CBS, you know, I was pulling a great five figures a week. Cut to... They hired Glenn Frey as the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Glenn wasn't the best actor.
Okay.
But he's Glenn Frey from the Eagles.
Yeah.
So he gets the job.
No doubt.
He's really not that great.
Okay.
So not only that, when we premiere, we're up against the number one show on TV, Home Improvement.
Ooh.
And we're also up against Melrose Place.
Jesus.
You see what I'm saying?
What you doing?
Now, that's not bad enough.
Oh, my God.
When we premiered during the California fires. So we didn't even air in Los Angeles.
Nobody was even checking for you.
No. So the ratings were horrible. Maybe they would have brought us back for a second season. But what happened was, towards the end of the first season, Glenn had hired an acting coach.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells the network, let's reshoot a lot of what we did in the beginning because my shit wasn't up to par. They said, no, that'll cost too much money, blah, blah. He gets mad, curses the network out.
Done. Out of there.
We were done.
Done.
And so that was like, damn, the like fuck? How you said.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Cut to, I get Mad TV.
Mm-hmm.
Now, listen, I'm grateful for it because it made me more famous than I was before I got there.
Yeah.
But let me be honest. Let's be honest. It ain't SNL.
Yeah.
SNL is the NBA.
Yeah, that's the NBA. SNL I gotta host SNL.
Listen,
I'm putting that out there. I'm hosting SNL.
Are you really?
No, I'm saying I'm going to.
Oh, well,
see, that's how I talk.
He's hosting on the night I'm on.
Yeah, there you
as
go.
As regular.
Let's call it out.
But
Long Greens, holla at me.
There it is. but what happened was, listen, man, there are people who have been on SNL that even if they weren't great, a movie was made.
Yeah.
They got a spinoff.
SNL that is the power it's of staple. SNL. I love it's that it's the quintessential for a comedian. You got to do it. That's why guys like Dave and Eddie and everybody go back and do it, man. It's like, you know, Tracy Morgan was like, yo, they always take care of me, man.
But you know, this is the part where some might go, Aries is on a soapbox. But I'm sharing with you my experience. I just went, my career has always felt like something good happens, but then there's an all shucks moment.
Right.
You know, South of Sunset, but all shucks. Mad TV, it ain't SNL. Oh, shucks. Even when I did, and here's what's crazy. When I talked to Barry Katz, Barry said, look, man, you have done what most people don't ever do. Right. There's so many people come to this town
and get nothing.
Nothing. You went from one failed show to a hit show to another failed. You've had three shots. My third shot, The Underground with Damon Wayans, the sketch show on Showtime. Raw, gritty. It's on. I said this is something that will blow up because it's never been done. A sketch show with no parameters.
Ooh,
you can go there.
You can go get it.
You know, by this point, Damon's rich, man. He don't need this. He's done several things. He don't need this.
Damon don't even want to come out right, the house right so, now. He's so chill.
We did the first season, and then I guess he didn't have. There was a disagreement with Showtime, and he was like, "Man, fuck it. I'm just going to go back to my castle."
And I'm chilling.
Oh, shucks.
Shucks.
Like, I'm going, what?
They just leave Aries in the parking lot.
Why couldn't Mad TV do for me what SNL did for blah, 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 blah?
Right.
Why couldn't South of Sunset be the big monster hit and never look back? Why couldn't The Underground with Damon take the fuck off?
Right. Because there's something else coming for you. You ready now? You had to get your knuckles dirty. You had to go through it. Cause now I guarantee you gonna appreciate it.
Oh, for sure.
Oh my God. You
listen, Chris Rock had one of the greatest quotes I ever heard.
You gonna appreciate it. You're gonna be at work early.
Chris Rock had one of the greatest things I ever heard. And I wanna get your opinion on this.
Go.
He goes, the best job in Hollywood is the better than the worst job out of it. Oh, better yet, the worst job in Hollywood is better than the best job out of it.
That's facts.
Now, here's why I say that. I said the one thing I don't ever want to do is be the Nickelodeon dad.
Oh, yeah.
Because my style of comedy, I go for the
jugular. It'll cornball you out.
And no disrespect, but
everybody would know you went for the bag.
I don't want to be Rondell Sheridan.
No disrespect, Rondell.
No, not at all.
No, not at all. You are fantastic, corny dad.
Give me New York Undercover.
You want some edge. Come on, man. Some swag.
But then I go, again, how many failures have to happen before you become the TV dad?
Are they going
to
break you? Don't do it.
I don't.
Don't let them break you. Don't let them break you.
I don't want to let them break me, Bill. But I'm
they're trying to break you. If I see you with the sweater, if I see you with the TV dad sweater, I'm going to blow you up.
And laughter.
Hey, guys. If you do that, that would be like if you saw me doing a chicken commercial. Like if you saw Bill Bellamy doing like a Burger King Whopper. Something crazy. And I'm holding.
Let me tell you something.
And I'm with the kids.
Right,
in the elevator. Guys, we are having it our way.
Nigga, my managers at one point got the call from Hollywood. What was that show? The Fit Club. About the Hollywood, the niggas losing weight.
The Biggest Loser.
The Biggest Loser.
Yeah.
I said, nah. You're not going to dog and pony and dog show me.
Nah,
yo.
Come on, Aries.
Yeah,
go harder.
Nah, nigga.
Yeah, you sneaking Twinkies in this shit.
And they offered me like.
They was paying real money.
They offered me like 180 grand.
Easy.
I said, nah.
And you make more as you go.
Right. You're not dog and pony showing me, man.
Right.
If I'm gonna be the butt of the fat jokes,
yeah,
it'll be on my
terms. My terms, yeah.
You ain't gonna have me on TV
on NBC
to flip a fucking tractor tire. No. You know what I'm saying? Get the fuck out of here, man.
No, this is the funniest shit I can share with y'all, right? Because everybody was, you know, I kept getting these offers, you know, to be on Dancing with the Stars and shit, right? And I'm like, man, you got me fucked up. I'm not doing no motherfucking, you know, Dance with the Stars. This is just Bill Bellamy.
Hold that. I just got to tag that.
Okay.
Dave Chappelle's great joke when he goes, Dancing with the Stars? Not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Not yet. Right. So get this, right? So
right.
So I'm sitting there and shit. And I either run in, I think I ran into DL or I ran into somebody I really knew. Mario.
Right.
Mario.
Right? The singer.
The singer.
The so good-looking Chris Rock.
Right, the good-looking Chris Rock. So Mario said, man, they breaking me off on this joint, man. This is crazy. Money-wise. Yeah, money-wise and shit. So I was like, what? He was like, yo, but this shit crazy. Right. He was like, it's crazy. He's dancing 9-10 hours a day. And DL, you know, DL, that's my big bro.
DL Hughley?
DL Hughley was like, yo, man, I'm out of here. This shit here, because DL don't like nothing to be over 2 hours. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, so it came up, the money was crazy. Right. And as you advance, it's crazy. So one day I'm going, damn, I mean, for how many weeks? Because you contemplate a little bit in my head and shit, right? So this is God that saved me from the
right,
dumb shit.
Right.
So I was like on the fence. Everybody saying, "B, you crazy? You not doing right now? Right. Dance with Stars ain't gonna fuck with nothing. It's gonna blow you up." And I run into Emmitt Smith. Hmm. And Emmitt said, "Man, don't you ever do no shit like that?" He said, "Don't
but didn't
nobody
he do it."
Yeah. He said, "They think I'm the king of Dancing with the Stars. They don't even know I play for the Cowboys." I said, "Oh shit! They don't know you 22."
Right.
He said, man, that's the craziest thing.
Damn.
These people looking at me like I'm the Dancing with the Stars king of dancing.
Wow.
But I am a Hall of Fame Emmitt Smith.
Broke records and shit?
Yeah. Yo!
Yeah.
He got a bust. He's a statue.
Right.
He got the yellow jacket. I said, nah, I'm easy on it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Not yet.
What Dave said, I'm not ready for niggas to judge my cha-cha.
Listen, man, this is the thing that is really important that I want people to just get out of this interview is that, you know, there are going to be obstacles. There are going to be setbacks in your life. There's going to be days of darkness. Everything does not always work out. But what are we going to do? Are we going to give up? Are we going to keep pushing? Are we going to find a new motivation to
My
get
manager
us through?
Used to say to me, you want to be rich or you want to be right? Because in this business, very seldom are you both.
That's interesting.
And, you know, I want to believe
that you could be right.
Both. You could be both.
Nah.
Dave is rich and right, is he not?
Yeah. But he takes flack for it sometimes.
Well, I'll take the flack. I've been taking the flack.
Yeah, let's get to the rich.
You know.
Let's get to the bag back.
Right.
Dave's like, man, this money's outstanding. And Dave said whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, man.
Dave gets an opportunity to really be who he is. And I think what's beautiful about Dave Chappelle, and I can say this because he's, you know, one of my best friends in this game, is that, like, he's always stayed true to his brand. Like, you know,
right.
He ain't trying to be this guy or try to flip over and turn it. He's always been Dave Chappelle.
Right.
And if they didn't understand it, they had to figure it out and come back to him.
Well, you know, my manager would always say to me, you know, you're not Bill Burr. You're not Dave Chappelle. You're not this comedian, meaning the same raw, edgy shit that they do, I can't do because they're at a level where they can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me to be told I can't do something or I am not as good as...
Oh, Dad. I'm
an Aries, and yeah, I'm an alpha male, and I'm from New York.
Yeah, you're not trying to hear it.
So that's not a good mixture.
Yeah. I'm going to give you a quick one, right? So Godfrey was on.
My man.
Bro, one of the most talented.
Did you see the clip we did?
No.
We did a clip where he was Jason Statham and I was Tony Soprano. You got to see this clip.
Man. Is it crazy?
At one point, the guy interviewing us, playing the moderator, said, and you know, I kind of do Jason, but I don't know if I do it as good as Godfrey. He goes, what's your favorite ice cream? Oh, you know, I like chocolate and vanilla. And they say, Tony, what's your favorite? I go, it's definitely not chocolate because of the fucking niggas.
Right.
When I say Godfrey lost it for 8 minutes, nigga.
Well, we're going to have to do an impression before you go. But the reason I brought Godfrey up, yeah. I said, Godfrey, you got to be one of the most talented, underrated comedians in the game. And he's like, yeah, I feel that way. He was like, what the fuck did I do? He said, I feel like the guy who did something, but nobody told him what he did to keep him from being the boom, boom.
I think he and I are like Malcolm X and Nat Turner of comedy, nigga. Because Godfrey, to
y'all
your point,
y'all are the king of the underground, like, dude, like y'all right there.
But he, listen, powerfully funny,
intelligent. Intelligent.
Can do the impressions.
Do everything.
There's no reason why Godfrey shouldn't be
a movie star, TV
one
star.
One of the names.
Come on.
But Godfrey, like me, you know, he let white folks know what it is.
Y'all let it go.
That nigga is.
So you might have a little bit of Paul Mooney in you.
Nigga, I tell these goddamn white folks what they want to know. The nerve of these motherfuckers. It's crazy. Niggas are arrogant. You've been arrogant, nigga. I'd expect you niggas made niggas work for 400 years. And now niggas want to take a break and they're lazy. Imagine that, nigga. Imagine that. White folks are hilarious. They're hilarious, Phil. You know this, Phil. If slavery came back tomorrow, then, oh, mammy, we miss you, mammy. Welcome back, mammy. We saved your cottage for you. We lit your fire. Now, please put that fat black titty in that white baby's mouth. Feed these goddamn children that big black Aretha Franklin titty.
Oh, my God.
I know that when the Popeye's chicken came out, you niggas went crazy for that goddamn chicken. It was what was in the batter. Aretha Franklin's ashes was in the batter. That chicken had soul, nigga. You know it's the truth, nigga.
But that's what happened with Paul Mooney.
Yeah.
Wait, let me get a pause.
Look, that's them coming to get me now.
Listen, they the said, funny, get that the nigga. Funny, the funniest shit is Paul Mooney was that guy.
He was Nat Turner for real.
Nat Turner of comedy. He was resilient, but he was defiant in such a way.
Yeah.
And he was so gritty and so to the,
you know, man. I said this before. It's
but
like, you
I
know,
loved him, but it was too much for Hollywood.
As black comedians, journalists of the streets, journalists of life, whether it's Eddie Griffin, me, you, I could go on and on, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Martin, we've all done black people, white people jokes because it's our life experience. Absolutely. It's what we know. It's what we live. It's our truth. But for some reason, when Paul did it, it almost felt like you're the Sojourner Truth of that. I'm the Frederick Douglass of that. Paul was Nat Turner, man.
He was
slicing the white baby's throats.
Yeah.
And fucking the women.
Yeah, he was doing a lot.
He was tougher on the palate.
Yeah, because it was so harsh, you know. He didn't put a little bit of charm in it. It was just raw truth.
Cigarettes without the filter.
Yeah, it was. I remember when Paul Mooney used to do Caroline's
right.
on that 12 o'clock midnight right. show.
Yeah.
He'd be sold out and it'd be 50 people and he'd walk them out.
Yeah.
He'd walk them out.
And oh, when the white people leave, I hope when you get home, niggas is burglarizing your house.
Wait. I can't with you. So I had Godfrey on here, and you guys are the king of impressions. Like, I can only do a few. You guys right. do a million. What? Your DMX is crazy.
Uh-huh.
I seen you do a freestyle with DMX on Sway. And that was literally bananas. Talking about you can't rap, whatever. You write your own bars.
You know, yeah, I could.
You got a few bars.
No, but I ain't a rapper though.
You know what I mean? But you do your thing. You got a good LL. I heard that. What's the one that's most difficult for you to grab their voice?
I don't try to do anything I can't. So okay. I know I stay in the pocket. You know, I always say impressions is music. It's notes.
That's what Godfrey said. He said, like, you hear the, once you learn the note, you can get
the
it.
The nuance
of it.
So again, you know, Shaq is breathy. He's bassy.
Right.
I score 28-10, I'm going to dominate. Joey Embiid, you got to dominate 28-10, man. If I got a little guy on me, that's barbecue chicken. On the time, I'm going to pass a pretty Ricky. He's showing all the shooters. If you double team me, if you don't double team me, I'm going hard in the paint. I'm gonna dunk and I'm gonna finish.
you got Shaq so good that he can't, every time you do it, he can't continue.
Let me have a moment of honesty. Okay. I'm gonna go back to little old Aries.
Go.
Listen, I get it. You gotta be political sometimes. And whenever I would see Jay Farrow
and Kenan Thompson
on NBA Inside the NBA on TNT. And, you know, Kenan would do Barkley and Jay would do Shaq. And I'm watching them watch them and they're being political. Oh, that was good.
No, they wasn't. They were killing it. Like, not like you.
Dude, here's where Shaq gave me the love. He recently was on Drink Champs.
Right.
And my man,
Noriega
goes, hey, man, of all the people that he didn't even get it out, Shaq,
Eric Spears. Eric Spears doesn't mean the best, man. Eric Spears, that's all.
got a crush.
Because it's a little, you know, Shaq got the fat Joe lean back.
Yeah.
And you know, certain things that he says, you know.
28 turn. You get 28 turn. When you say turn, you get 28 turn. Bus barbecue chicken, man.
When you get that. That's what, like, you know, Tony Soprano.
What if Tony Soprano? Do you want to do Tony?
Wait, let me give him a little Tony first.
All right, let's give us a Tony.
Everything with Tony is ish. When you talk about Janish, Uncle Joe. Yeah.
All right, I'll do. Like, what if Tony Soprano and Chris Tucker did a movie together?
Oh, you going to Chris?
Yeah, I'll do Chris.
All right. Okay. Tony, what we doing, man? We're going to do whatever the fuck I shit we're going to do. But don't get it wrong. I'm the fucking white guy. You're the fucking baboon.
Hey. Whoa, man, you can't say no shit like that, man.
I've been saying shit like that. I'm fucking Italian. The fuck you expect?
Man, I'm from Atlanta, man.
Where the fuck is Atlanta?
Man, you better watch your mouth, man.
Sounds like some fucking place in the fucking ocean. Hey, pussy, where are we going to dump the body? Fucking Atlanta ocean.
I can't keep up with this motherfucker. All right, well, first of all right, let's try to wrap this up. First
Let me
foremost,
promote your shit for a second.
Oh, okay, good.
Ladies and gentlemen, stories of laughter. Lessons and Triumph, top billing, Bill Bellamy. The book is available where?
Yeah, everywhere.
Everywhere, man. Yeah,
the Audible is crazy. All the stories, all the like.
The Audible, is it your voice?
It's my voice.
Okay, how long does that take?
It took me 10 hours.
Really?
Yeah, but it's a great read. It's a great listen. You laugh. You go through my life. It's like a soundtrack to my life.
You know, I just want to say that I read this book while I was in the prison. Now that I'm out, I'm going to get with one of my favorite type of women, the Spanish women. We're going to read the book, and I'm going to make a special drink because she's Spanish. I'm going to make a penis colada.
Hey, man, let everybody know where they can hear your podcast, boss.
It's called Spears and Steinberg, available on all streaming platforms. Please, please, please also subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're trying to grow that. It's under Spearsberg Pod. SpearsbergPod. Or you can hit me up on Instagram under Aries Spears. Slide in my DMs. I'll send you the links. Chop it up with you. And, you know, go toe for toe. You want to try to get jokey?
Let's get it.
Be careful. You can call me out my throne. I'm going to act crazy.
You're going to act crazy. It's going to get real.
Yeah.
Everybody, Aries Spears, top billing, baby.
Yeah.
Milk is chillin', this is chillin'.